Thanks for inviting me into your home. Your long-haul truck, taxicab, RV, camper, that greasy spoon just off the interstate, and your cabin in the woods. Welcome to Coast AM. I'm Richard Serrett. We are coming to you live from Coast's Toronto, Canada affiliate, Talk Radio AM 640, here on the shores of Lake Ontario. Good to be with you. Thanks for your fine company. 36 years ago, 1980, in North Vancouver, John Hutchison, self-taught researcher, inventor, was playing around with high-voltage electricity and some Tesla technology, radio waves, and things got weird. Things in his lab started to levitate. Cannonballs, snowplows. He caught the attention of the Canadian Broadcast Corporation, the Deputy Prime Minister of Canada at the time, Colonel John Alexander at the Los Alamos National Laboratory. Understandably, they wanted to know, how was John Hutchison doing this? City Hall near Vancouver started getting complaints. The Hutchison effect was radiating out into the neighborhood, and people were reporting that their dishes, among other things, were levitating. The videos of these effects were posted on YouTube. The problem was the Hutchison effect was somewhat random. It wasn't reproducible on a consistent basis. So the Canadian government, Los Alamos and others, they filed all of this information away as a curiosity, but they weren't certain what they could do with it. Eventually, John sold much of his lab off to a German company on eBay. Then he met Nancy, an activist, researcher, TV host, candidate for the Supreme Court of Minnesota's They hit it off. They married. John and Nancy took what remained of John's lab, put it on a truck. Imagine trying to get that equipment across the border. They drove south to the Gulf Coast. Nancy had it in her mind that the Hutchison effect might somehow prove useful after the Deepwater Horizon oil spill began on the 20th of April, 2010. Tonight on Coast, we'll discuss how John and Nancy's ray gun was used not only to treat the contaminated oil in the Gulf Coast, but how it's being used today to ameliorate the fallout from the Fukushima nuclear disaster, which began in March of 2011. John and Nancy Hutchison are standing by on the phone from their home in Gold Beach, which is located on the rugged and devastatingly beautiful coast of Oregon. But first, an appeal on behalf of my fellow Canadians up in the far north of Alberta and Fort McMurray. Tens of thousands of people have been evacuated from Fort McMurray due to a wildfire that has so far destroyed at least 1,600 homes and buildings. The fire began Sunday, May the 1st, the Alberta government has declared a provincial state of emergency. Thousands of people up there are stranded. They've lost everything. They have no home. They're scared. So I'd ask that you please take a moment and visit the website redcross.ca, redcross.ca, and if you're able to donate to the Alberta Fires Appeal, I'd appreciate it. Again, go to redcross.ca, and you can donate to the Alberta Fires Appeal. And to all of those from Fort McMurray, please know I'm thinking about you. The Coast to Coast listeners are thinking about you. Second half of Coast to Coast tonight, the last 2 hours, open lines. Your opportunity to climb into the co-pilot's chair, ride shotgun, and help steer the mothership anywhere you want to fly it. Open lines on Coast to Coast, why it's as American and Canadian as baseball, hockey, apple pie, and beaver tails. Richard Serrett sitting in for George Norrie here on Coast. Come on in, hang your cloak on a peg, grab a stool, come warm yourself by the fire. You are among friends. This is Coast to Coast AM. I hope you'll stay a while. Canadian John Hutchison is a self-taught inventor who discovered a collection of phenomena now known as the Hutchison effect. During attempts to study the longitudinal waves of Nikola Tesla back in 1979, some of the effects produced include levitation of heavy objects, metal samples turned transparent, metals turned into jelly, and the spontaneous fracturing of metals. The Hutchison effect has been well documented both on film and videotape, and has been witnessed many times by numerous credentialed scientists and engineers. His findings have been televised in the U.S., Japan, and Canada. They've also piqued interest from electrical engineering aircraft companies, the Canadian Department of Defense, and the military. Nancy Hutchison is John's research partner and his lovely bride. Good to have you both back on Coast to Coast AM. How are you?
Doing fine, Richard. Nice talking to you again.
Excellent. You're a little faint on the coming down the pipe there in Oregon, so if I could get you both to really, really belt it out and speak up.
Okay.
Is this better?
Sounds good so far. So first of all, let me say, great meeting you both in person for the first time back in March. My TV crew and I arrived at your doorstep in Gold Beach. It was kind of a torrential downpour, and you were very gracious to let us stay the night in your complex, if I can call it that.
Oh, of course, Richard. That was awesome. Thanks for coming.
Hard to believe it's been 35 plus years since the world started talking about the Hutchison effect, and you were working in this lab, as I mentioned earlier, in North Vancouver, experimenting with high voltage electricity and some Tesla technology. And for those who are not familiar and who have not heard you before on Coast, John, just take us back to 1980 and give us kind of a thumbnail sketch of what you had discovered and what it all entailed.
Well, it's a broad topic. I'll try, though. I was very interested in old electrical machinery and some of the research of Nikola Tesla. And I met somebody who was a friend of Tesla. But anyway, jumping right into this.
And I'll get you to, I'll ask you once again, John, to really speak up, because for whatever reason, the phone line is kind of faint.
Yeah, I'm right here trying to do the best I can. So with the Tesla machinery and old electrical machinery, I noticed these odd effects happening, and that caught the attention of scientists who then later on presented it to the Pentagon way, way back, and they sent out a team of scientists, Colonel John Alexander, along with a group from Los Alamos. And we did our presentation, being one of the first on the Star Wars program. And then later on, that kind of like, well, you know, we don't know what it is, we'll just put it away kind of attitude. Then the Canadian government got involved, and basically the same thing happened. Then McDonnell Douglas got involved, and then I started putting it on television. The news media got involved, and then, I've done a lot of demonstrations for a number of years, and also TV shows, and passing along over a lot of territory here, going up to about 2006. I was giving demonstrations for National Geographic TV and Film and Beyond Production, Griffin Film Productions. Then the effects were happening radiating out into the neighborhood. So as you mentioned, dishes were levitating and odd things were happening. Oh my goodness. So anyway, as time marched on, I connected with Nancy. I went to Minnesota. Then I made a decision to sell the anti-gravity portion of the lab to a German research team who actually videotaped it for 2 weeks before they bought it. And then worked my way out to the Oregon coast.
Now, sorry, Nancy, go ahead and welcome.
Territory. Nancy, go ahead.
Yeah, sorry.
Go ahead.
It was Gulf of Mexico, then Minnesota, then Oregon.
Right. Okay. Well, and we'll get to that timeline in a moment. But one of the things that jumped out at me, John, when we sat down and talked recently, was you were so, at the time, sort of nonplussed by all of this. You weren't, you know, when you had cannonballs levitating, when you had a snowplow flying across the lab, you thought, well, this isn't very practical. When you had metal samples sort of transmutating, become gelatin-like, or fracturing under these conditions of high voltage electricity. Your reaction was, you know, I just ruined a metal sample. I can't machine that now. And you were throwing these things in the garbage and driving the researchers and the observers nuts because, you know, this was, I mean, you were demonstrating anti-gravity here, and you weren't impressed. This to me is absolutely astounding that you just sort of took this all in stride.
Well, yeah, I was never really trying to promote anything. I've always been like a super, I don't know, super glorified collector of things. And to me, I was collecting electrical machinery and playing with it. Then to have a metal sample break apart or something flying off the shelves, it was more of a nuisance for me. But word leaked out about that to the scientific community in an odd way. So then I would get these folks coming around saying, well, can we see it in operation? And I said, okay. And I turn up the machine and they start taping it. At the time, it was Super 8 millimeter film. Then they tried to persuade me to get into a contract with them. I said, well, you know, I'm not a scientist, and I'm visualizing in my head that scientists in a big laboratory are probably doing this all the time anyway. Anyway, Alex Pizzero, George Hathaway, they made a presentation to the U.S. Pentagon folks and got a Star Wars contract and funding, and that funding included a payment for Los Alamos team, Bob Feiberg, and Colonel John B. Alexander and his group. So they came out and did about a four-month demonstration for them. And then after that, I was paid about $200 per day in cash money. But after that demonstration, they kind of went away. And I believe through Colonel John Alexander, he arranged for McDonnell Douglas Aerospace Company to come in and do another experiment. And luckily, we got some good stuff on video. And I had the video, they released the videos to me, which I have on my YouTube channel.
Then, was it the fact, John, that at the time, a lot of these effects were somewhat random? I mean, you couldn't predict when the cannonball was going to levitate. You couldn't necessarily predict when that metal sample under the Hutchison effect was going to turn to jelly. The fact that it, I mean, this is all, you know, the scientific method here, that it, the fact that it wasn't consistently reproducible, that is that what led to them saying, well, it's curious, but we don't know what to do with it. So is that how it ended up essentially sort of on the shelf?
Well, in part, that was it. Plus, also, they wanted me to work with them all the time. They would have had sponsorship from Prince Liechtenstein in Liechtenstein. But, you know, I was going over this in my head, and I said, well, you know, would this curtail my freedom? I'm not a business person. I don't fit into the business world. I'm not a scientist. I don't fit in the scientific world. So there's a lot that I had to think over. And I decided, no, I really don't want to do this.
Can I jump in?
Yeah.
Please, Nancy. Yes, go ahead.
His lab has been taken many times. And the big lab, the 1987 lab, the one that had all these effects in it that there's a lot of footage out on the Internet with, that's the one that a German group was trying to get John to immigrate. And we're going to go through on the website the whole story on this. But what happened was the lab was taken. And so John's without his lab, comes back. He ends up redoing and recreating his laboratory, but with different equipment. And he gets consistent effects. And that's what the most recent stuff is, you know, 2000 on, 1997, somewhere in there, when he really started going. He was doing the crystal power cells, and he was really active, but it was different equipment. And that's what's amazing about John, is that They took his lab. So he took apart some Navy ships, got some equipment, and built another one in a 400-square-foot apartment and did all these amazing things in it.
Right, until the fire marshal in New Westminster got a little tired of all the complaints from the neighborhood. And John Hutchison and Nancy Hutchison on the line from Gold Coast, Oregon, here on Coast to Coast. Richard Serrett sitting in for George Norrie. And we'll begin to talk about the different applications for this technology, because the other thing that you mentioned to me, John, when we had our sit down was you kind of got, you know, you're someone who wants to look for the next thing. You know, what's the next plateau, the next horizon? And, you know, after levitating cannonballs and snow plows being thrown around the warehouse and so forth, you decided, okay, what's next? So, as you mentioned, you sold a lot of this equipment on eBay to this German company. Then you meet Nancy. And Nancy, talk to me how you started to sort of figure out, well, maybe what you were doing, maybe we could apply that, for example, to maybe ameliorating some of the disastrous effects from the BP oil spill back in 2010. I mean, how did you make that connection?
Can I explain that?
Yeah, please do.
John and I had been living together for about a year before the BP oil disaster happened. He's going back to get his lab, and we're going to pack up his stuff and come back to Minnesota. And we had been working on crystal power cells, and I happened to have sulfigyotones in my laptop because we were building these crystal power cells under these sound vibrations to set up a different crystal structure. And so I had my laptop with us, and we're going out there, and I'm thinking, this is a man who can change metal into something that's not metal anymore. And that's been verified by the Max Planck Institute, is that he's transmutating into something they can't even identify. And so I started bugging him out there, saying, can you take dirty water, oily water, and turn it back into clean water? So we started experimenting. I was out there for 3 months and couldn't get it. And I've had some people send up samples from Biloxi, and tarball in it. Oh, just nasty, horrible stuff. And I said, why don't we try these sulfigyotones and set it into the equipment, as an input.
What kind of tones, Nancy? Explain what those are.
Sulfigyotones are the Gregorian chants, the Catholic Gregorian chants. That's why they have these chapels with these great big domes on them, because it's a resonance chamber. And there are certain chords of these certain notes that create a resonance that heals you. And we're mostly water. So the hypothesis was if we're mostly water and it heals us, is it going to heal the water? And we had all this equipment set up and all these different water samples and oscilloscope and all this going, and did the experiment, and it was immediate. I mean, within a second, the dirty water was the same resonance as the clean water.
And you had a control. You had like normal tap water. You had water from neighboring the Pacific Ocean, and then you had the stuff from Biloxi, right?
Yep. Yeah, when the stuff from Biloxi, when we opened it, we had to get out of the apartment because the fumes were so bad. It was so polluted.
From the tar balls.
Tar balls and the Corexic and all that stuff that was in there. And then we decided, and it's like, hey, you know, you can do this to a quart, you know. Oh, you can do this, you know, to 100,000 million quarts, you know, in the Gulf of Mexico. But he wasn't convinced. It took a lot of, like, guilt, crying. And then what really worked was bribing him with the adventure of his life. And so that worked. And
oh, my. Oh, my. Okay.
And then, Nancy, you had to convince John to pack up what was left of his lab, all of this equipment, put it on a truck, and ship it across the border. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, that's a story in itself. I mean, how you convince the people at Homeland Security or whomever. I can't imagine the paperwork involved in shipping all of this electrical equipment, Tesla coils and all of this stuff south, and then telling them, well, we're taking it to the Gulf Coast to, you know, to repair the damage from the New Horizon. Listen, we'll take a time out, come back. John Hutchison, discoverer of the Hutchison effect, anti-gravitic effects, and how it's being used to shield the Pacific Northwest from the nuclear fallout from Fukushima, along with Nancy Hutchison. Coast to Coast AM, Richard Sarrett in for George Norrie. Thanks for your company. Welcome back. She's a Rainbow, from the 1967 LP, Her Majesty's Satanic Request, kind of the Rolling Stones' answer to their friendly rivals, the Beatles, Sgt. Pepper. All right, we will get back to our conversation with John and Nancy Hutchison in just a moment. Just a reminder, ParanormalDate.com is now approaching, get this, 44,000 members. Imagine an opportunity to connect with 44,000 men and women who are like-minded. They share the same interests. They listen to and love Coast to Coast AM. So if you're looking to make a connection with somebody, ParanormalDate.com would be a great place to start looking, and it's free to sign up. Spring is here. It's time to put yourself out there, meet new people, have fun. You deserve it. You're worth it. Paranormal.com. Remember, you're not alone. Anti-gravity and ameliorating the nuclear fallout from Fukushima with John and Nancy Hutchison when Coast to Coast continues right after this. Welcome back to Coast AM. Richard Sarrett sitting in for George Norrie. John and Nancy Hutchison on the line from Gold Beach, Oregon. John, the discoverer of the Hutchison effect, playing around with high voltage electricity, Tesla technology, some 36 years ago, and the effects included levitation. That's right, levitation of heavy objects like cannonballs, a snowplow. Many of these things can be viewed on YouTube. Nancy Hutchison, his research assistant and lovely wife, is with us as well. So where we left off, John and Nancy, you had sort of packed up what remained of your Tesla-like lab, and you were going to ship it south to the Gulf Coast because, Nancy, you had it in your mind that, and this was later proven, that you could essentially purify water, and this is in the aftermath of the New Horizon BP oil spill in 2010, devastating the Gulf Coast. So you created sort of a, I guess, a miniature version of the lab, and you put it on a truck, and you shipped it down to the Gulf Coast.
No, we dragged it down with an old pickup truck.
Okay. How did you get it through customs? I mean, that must have been an absolute nightmare. I can't imagine the paperwork.
It was a month's worth of paperwork and 2 hours interrogation by the FBI, and they took apart the entire trailer with the panels and everything. I don't know what they're looking for. And when I told them that I'd get my TV camera and we'd continue the interview with them on camera, then they said the interview's over.
Ah, that's the old trick you play with the IRS or up here, the Canada Revenue Service. Exactly. Threaten to record everything, and all of a sudden they get very polite in a hurry. So your destination was, it seems to me you arrived at like a KOA camp. Was it down in Florida, or where were you? Where did you arrive?
Bay, in Perdido Bay. Yep. No.
Okay. And what does this thing look like then that you've got on the back of this pickup truck? Describe it for us.
It was a 24-foot trailer, cargo trailer, and it was loaded full of radio equipment. And there's also a ton of John's old antique firearms that I did when I got across the border. I did ship those home. So what was left was about 2 tons, dragging 2 tons with an old farm pickup truck that was quite interesting to drive.
I'll bet.
The radiator replaced in it. I mean, it was just that we got there was amazing. And John was just, he set it up. And before we got there, we had the water tested. And we set up an exact location, put the oscilloscope in the water, floating up the probes in the water and verifying the resonance and all this kind of stuff. So we did all that. Our cover story was that we were calling for UFOs.
That's your cover story.
The KOA owner did not want to admit that the water was contaminated. Actually, it was highly contaminated. It was 6 parts per million of oil and grease, and it was very, very bad. It was brown.
6 parts per million. What's considered contaminated? 1 part, 2 parts?
One is considered contaminated. You don't want any. When you get one, you're in trouble.
Okay, but if I could get, John, can you describe what this, was it a 24-foot ray gun is how you sort of describe it, but what does it look like?
The trailer was 24 foot long.
Okay, but what's the device look like?
Well, it looked like a lot of Navy surplus electronics, and the antennas look like countermeasure antennas. And one big ray gun I built a long time ago, it was about 8 feet long. It was actually part of the countermeasures off a Navy ship that I put together. And I
and we slept under it for 3 months. That's also the ray gun that got mounted on top of the old SWAT bus when we came out here.
Yeah.
Okay, so you've got this ray gun, and it's got an array of antennas and so what is it in effect doing? What do you're aiming it out into the coast, the Gulf Coast. Mm-hmm. What is it emitting?
Well, it's under RF, and what I mean by RF is that it's very light RF energy that's within STC rules and regulations, like it's in milliwatts or microwatts. It's a combination of different frequencies, and then Nancy put her tones through them into what they call the external modulation of an RF amplifier. So it'd be actually broadcasting in RF up to a couple hundred feet, all these tones and things like that.
Sort of these lost musical scales. We're familiar with Gregorian chants, and I guess there is some connection with those musical notes. For example, in Lourdes in France, where pilgrims go every year for the healing waters, there is this belief that these musical notes, these tones, and we're also familiar with, of course, the researcher the late Emoto in Japan, who was experimenting with tones and its effect on the structure of water crystals. So this was sort of the theory behind this, correct?
Yes, that's correct. And RF radio waves, of course, give information on the subatomic realm, so to speak, and this information traveled, kind of almost like science studies in parapsychology. In that, Dr. Robert Jan, certain frequencies, a large amount of information can be sent with little energy.
So your RF signal was sort of that was the carrier wave, if you will, and then Nancy, you infused these musical notes into that carrier wave. How far out into the Gulf Coast is this going? I mean, were you running interference with the FCC, for example? Were they not
no
concerned?
No, FCC, but I was watching the ocean current on NOAA, like backdoored it so I could get in and see the currents that were going on and the different levels where the currents were. And when we got there, there was zero, no current in the Gulf of Mexico, not on the surface, nothing. I mean, this oil had just stagnated the entire water column. And I screenshotted this. I did a video sometime on it. I don't know where it is. And then after our very first Perdido Bay, there's this little current. It's right on the shore, right where we were, and probably 50 miles, just this section that it was 50 miles along the shore that had a current, nothing else. So the next place we went to, same thing. It had a current right there. And so then we went in between, and it had and then it connected it. And so basically we were going around the circle in the Gulf of Mexico, and we ended up on the panhandle, and the loop current had stalled, the one that came up from from Cuba. And we had a gentleman from the Navy that came down and saw what we were doing. And we're still in contact with him. And I emailed him and I said, watch the loop current. Here it comes. And we had created a vortex in the Gulf of Mexico. And he was working with me on this. I'm showing him all this stuff that's going on. So this, we now have a current that's spinning around in the Gulf, and it's pulling up the loop current. See, the loop current, it would go in, go into the Gulf of Mexico, go around Florida, and go dump over in England. And I called, and I talked to this colonel, and I said, all right, this is the day it's going to happen. And it did. He called me back, and he said, damn. I mean, the whole weather changed everything. He goes, how did you know? Because I was tracking this. So I'm the investigative reporter. You got to prove this stuff to me.
Right. You're from Missouri. Well, I know you're from Minnesota, but on this, you're from Missouri. Show me.
Yep. So Mr. Hutchison then, and I started using my TV camera that I had a TV show in Minnesota, and I had my little Panasonic, and running around, and I'm playing this back. I finally get a computer. I had the camera, but I didn't have a computer. And I'm looking at these videos, goes, what is this static? What is the problem here? I'm going frame by frame, and I'm, oh, my goodness. And I had evaluated John's work in the past. I mean, the stuff from the old 1980s films and early 90s, and they have all this static in it. And I looked at that frame by frame, and what was in his lab back in the 1980s, that same static, that same pattern was all over, everywhere in the Gulf, all over the water. And you could see it. You could see it moving like vortexes and different patterns. So you could actually see in the editing program with Final Cut Pro, you could see the actual patterns that John was creating. Amazing.
And you're collecting water samples, obviously. Once you fire up the ray gun, you collect water samples. Where are you sending the water samples to? Who's looking at these?
There's a lab in Alabama. Mobile, isn't that where they're analytical laboratories? And this is a laboratory that had been analyzing the water way before we got down there. And we hooked up with them, told them what we were doing for free. He analyzed all of our before and after samples and gave us scientific reports, every one of them.
And you put these up on SlideShare, right?
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
And so what's the what was the result?
Well, the result was Fukushima blew. And we ended up on the panhandle, and we had a nice place there. We had a tidal creek that we would load up like a cannon. You know, it would load up with the frequencies and shoot out twice a day. I had amazing stuff. It was turning, it looked like liquid plasma. The minnows were, and the fish were bubbling out of this creek. I mean, it was absolutely amazing. And then Fukushima blew. And we had a gentleman that was working with us that we'd hooked up with, fan of John's and stuff. And we all looked at each other and said, this is the end of the world. This is it.
Well, a lot of us thought that. But before we get to Fukushima, though, I'm curious about the test results. You sent the water samples from the Gulf Coast to this lab in Mobile, Alabama. What did they find out? I mean, what was happening with these samples of water?
Perdido Bay. Sample taken before we got there. Before we even got over to the stake. Got it in and analyzed. Next day we're there. Take that sample. That sample got analyzed before any equipment was running. 6 parts per million contamination. Our sample, it was non-detectable. You kept running it, going, what happened? This can't be right. Non-detectable. So, you know, the phone call, come on over, let's talk about this. And then he said he would do our analyzing for free, and would I go here, and could we go there?
And these slide shares, are these available on the website where people can go and look at these results?
Yes, they will be. I have over 5,000 documents that I have to post. So we just got it up today, got the website up, and we're building an entire library, and there are There's a details section. We're going to go over the details of John's technology. There's a video where John and I finally pull it out of him, the basics of anti-gravity. And we're actually going to go through all those steps, but there's a basics. This is how you do it. And then we're going to go over each step in detail.
Okay. Now, I recall when we were chatting, Nancy and John, and you were talking about, let's back up a little bit, when you took the, originally, when you were still in Vancouver, John and Nancy, you took some of this water from Biloxi, Mississippi with the tar balls in it. And when it was exposed to these, you know, radio waves infused with your musical tones, Nancy, you described what happened to the structure of the water and what happened to the tar balls that were floating in the water. Can you tell me a little bit about that? Because this, to me, is absolutely, you know, mind-boggling.
Okay, so we had the O-scope, the oscilloscope set up with these silver tubes that were the probes that were, it was all a very controlled experiment. And when the reading on the O-scope with the Pacific seawater that we had as a standard and the tap water, almost identical. So what they're doing is they're picking up, the O-scope's picking up the resonance of the water. The water has a frequency to it. Went over and did the same thing and put it in with the Biloxi water with the tarball in it. And, by the way, we have videotapes of all this. And Dan couldn't even find it on the scope. I mean, the frequency of it was so off of what water is supposed to be. So I had to readjust the scope to even find its signal. Then we started the equipment up and ran the tones, and I'm watching the O-scope, and I'm watching the rhythm on the O, it's jiggling, and it just like it's in rhythm with the tone. And like it, now it's no longer in that section of the scope, and I'm going back and forth trying to find out where it was, and there it was, identical to the other two. I figured it didn't smell anymore. It was like, wow, all right. So we took this water, and we all, you know, packed up and did all this, but we actually took the water and gave it to someone, a scientist in the Los Angeles area, and had him analyze it. And I had a control sample that was out in the truck, but then John did what John always says, and he cranks it up, and it went out into the neighborhood, and so my control sample got hit as well. So I said, analyze these two, right, because I don't have the actual original anymore. These two, the one that got hit with the broadcast and one that got hit with the whole kitchen sink in his lab. The one that was in his lab with the tarball, it went through a scanning electron microscope, salt and water. Salt was. The tar ball was salt and water. And you're looking at this thing, it's black. Well, how can it be salt and water? Because it's black. It's a tar ball. The other one looked just like clean seawater. Salt, water, magnesium, potassium, all the things that are, but no oil, no tar, no nothing. So that was like, oh, all right, this broadcasting this is what works. Because
and you have to have it, I mean, once you turn off the ray gun, because, you know, you didn't leave the ray gun there, you only had it turned on for a certain period of time. I mean, how long lasting are the effects? If you turn it off, then what happens to the water in the Gulf Coast?
Well, from after we left, we had the person that had come and worked with John, he was there, and it lasted, he said, for about 6 months, 9 months, and then it all started to, you know, die again. But, I mean, it was like a Garden of Eden. That we had birds coming in and making nests in front of the speakers, larvae from the shrimp swarming over everything that we're doing in the creek. I mean, it was just this amazing pumping of life in that area. The water turned purple.
All right, listen, Nancy, I got to jump in here. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll continue to talk about the incredible effects of John Hutchison, Nancy Hutchison's ray gun on the Gulf Coast, and then we'll talk about how they utilized that same technology, or are utilizing that same technology, to ameliorate the effects of the nuclear fallout from the Fukushima nuclear disaster in 2011. Here's Tom Waits taking us into the break with Time here on Coast to Coast AM.